Welcome back. It is Friday night. And the best thing about Friday night is taking your phone calls right here at Coast to Coast AM. I do it so much. It is one of my favorite nights here when I host Coast to Coast. You can catch George Norrie's internet TV show. It's called Beyond Belief, for dynamic discussions on paranormal phenomena, conspiracy, and all things unexplained. You can check out previews right now over at Coast to Coast AM and just click on Beyond Belief and go straight there. You can sign up for just 99 cents for the first month and enjoy hours of fascinating past shows. Just go to beyondbelief.com. My guest tonight, taking your calls, Greg Hausch. At the center of it all, he was anonymous, hacking, malware, conspiracy. He was right there. And more with Greg and your phone calls when we come back. Stay right there. Welcome back to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, Greg Hausch. It's Friday night. We're taking your calls all night. And right as the downbeat happened right there, I looked up and the clock said 11, 11, 11, right in a row. Wow. Pretty trippy when you see something like that happen. Let's go right back to the phones. Let's go to Cliff, Wild Card, Bristol, Tennessee. You're up next on Co. Say hi to Greg.
Hey, Greg and Jimmy. Great show, by the way. Very informative. I got interested in hacking a few years ago after watching a movie called Crackdown with Kevin Mitnick. Remember, you know who Kevin Mitnick is?
Oh, yeah, we know Kevin.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was only a matter of time before Mr. Mitnick was brought up tonight, but there you go.
Well, I got interested in hacking, and I'm kind of a novice hacker, and it's amazing the tools that you can find on the Internet. You got to do a lot of reading, but I've actually got into computers all over the world, and it's amazing what people put on their computer.
And that's right, Cliff. And did you have a question for Greg? Because I have a comment about Mitnick that I've kind of got to get in here. But did you have a question for Greg?
What I wanted to ask him about the difference between Trojans and viruses. I think it has to be controlled by a person. It's got like a client and a server part of the Trojan. And if he could explain the difference between viruses and Trojans, I would appreciate that. And I'll take my answer off here.
Thank you, Cliff. Greg, the difference between a Trojan and a virus.
You know, the kind of old school standard definitions, as most of the people I know put them, is a Trojan is something that you're putting in there to gain access. You want control of that machine or access to that machine. You know, so named after the Trojan horse. You know, they want it behind the wall, right?
Right.
A virus, usually sole intent is just to cause damage. It's just there to be a nuisance and not much else. So that's kind of how we think of them.
I wanted to ask you really quick before we move on. You can tell I'm a big music guy, right? And I know you're listening to the music tonight.
I'm a kid of the 80s, so, you know, I'm loving your selection.
You're right there, right? What did you listen to when you were, you see hackers, you know, you see the images of them, you know, with the headphones on and the disconnect that happens because you're listening to the music and you're cutting off your environment around you. Did you do that? And when you did, what were you listening to?
Almost entirely punk music. Everything from kind of the earliest punk as I see it, all the way up until, you know, then into the early to mid 90s, you know, picking up things like NoFX and
wow,
and all the newer stuff.
Wow. So did you do Black Flag?
Huge fan. I love Henry Rollins.
Yeah, man, me too. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And what about like X? Did you go there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've always been a fan of the even earlier stuff that I consider punk, like, say, early Stooges and Iggy Pop. You know, that was punk, right? I don't care about the British battle of the 70s, you know, of Britain versus New York.
And, right,
you know,
right.
I think it happened earlier than that.
Well, you know, I was always a big Sex Pistols guy, and you know, earlier I played PIL, you know.
Right.
But there you go. And that's interesting. That's really interesting to me. All right, let's go to Lynn. We're going to go to Lynn in Seattle, Wildcard. Lynn, welcome to Coast. You're up.
Thank you. It's my understanding that the people that were in the military who weren't willing to fire on the American people were weeded out no matter what rank they had achieved, which has pretty much left only people who are willing to kill Americans, and also that a lot of the military are from other countries. So my question is, since Anonymous is a worldwide movement, have they ever issued a video to wake up military and police personnel to the fact that once they've killed the masses that they've been told to kill, that they themselves will become expendable?
Well, that's it. Yeah, actually, you know what? I'm going to let you go ahead, Greg. Answer that.
Well, that's a hard one to answer.
It is. It is.
I don't know that I've ever seen a video specifically addressing that or not really thinking about that in that way. There's a lot of assumptions being made there that, you know, until I were to look them up and research, I don't know what to say about.
And then you have Chelsea Manning.
Of course.
You know, so that's sort of addressing what Lynn is referring to.
Sort of, but I mean, Chelsea is, again, more of a whistleblower who was snitched out by a dirtbag.
Yeah, as opposed to actually hacking in. Yeah, I get you. Hey, Lynn, thank you for the phone call. Okay, I think Lynn is gone. Let's go to Mike. We're going to go to Mike in Livermore, California, out here, out west. Mike, welcome to Coast.
Robbing everybody who came around the corner doing that, making them stop.
Okay.
Hello?
Mike, you're live.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm wondering about this whole Pokemon game. And I'm kind of person who thinks out of the box and ahead of the game. So I'm wondering where this thing goes because it is blowing my mind. I don't...
Oh. That's my fault. Let me see if I still got Mike here. Mike, I still got you. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know if you caught anything. What I was calling about, and it's a little bit out of the box, the Pokemon game. And pretty much, I'm wondering, where is this leading to? What kind of information are they going to pull out of that? How are they going to herd these people? Because I'm telling you, I'm sitting out at the park where I usually am on Friday, Saturday night, listening to the show with my dog in the dog park, and I've seen 60 people in a matter of an hour and a half come through here glued to their cell phone playing this game. I know that's what they're doing.
Yeah, it's all over the place now, Mike, and I agree with you. Greg, what do you think? I mean, there is evidence, of course, that has been presented out there that the CIA invested all of the seed money for the technology behind the game. And that's a pretty frightening statement right there. And then, of course, it's
That evidence is unbelievably questionable. I mean, this is really simple to me. You know, Niantic, the people behind it, were originally the people behind Google Earth.
Right.
Before Google bought them up and bought up Earth and did all that work. Pokemon Go for them was originally an April Fool's joke they were going to build as an extension to Google Earth. When they realized what they had, they were split off from Google into their own entity. And then they followed it further down the line and made this game. I think it's personally just a really straight capitalism play. They found a way to get businesses to pay them for more customers to show up. One of the big things about the game is you as a business, you can pay the Pokemon Go game for something called a lure, and it's like $100 for like 30 minutes, and then there will be Pokemon at your business where people playing the game can then come get them, and they're in your business. I really just think this is as straight capitalism as you can get. They found a way to get businesses to pay for people to play this game.
Interesting. And now what
I
about
think it's disgusting, but that's what I think they're doing.
Well, let me ask you this. When you go through the alpha and beta testing stages when you're writing software, you're writing code for a game like this, and a sophisticated game like this, and it gets all the way to the release, and they somehow forget or don't implement the full access or stop implementing the full access to your Google email, the ability to send and receive and write email, full access to your databases and your Google photographs and everything else that you would have in Google, that right. somehow that slipped past beta testing. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't know that it slipped past. I mean, I will say these people, everyone knows how much data Google, you know, takes from you and how much they store, how much they know about you. And these people used to work at Google, so I'm sure it's kind of ingrained in who they are now to gather as much as they can get away with gathering.
Let's go to let's go back out west to Kurt right here in San Clemente, California. Kurt, welcome to Coast.
Good evening, gentlemen. Jim, I'd like to ask Greg a question about if he knows or has ever heard the term sensitive information compartment facility.
Greg, sensitive information compartment facilities.
No.
Okay. Kurt, is there a reason why you're asking that?
Yeah, Robert Woodward wrote a book, and it revealed that our previous president had a facility built on his land while he was president, that had a sensitive information compartment facility. And as an American citizen, it would concern me that a facility like that, once he's no longer president, I would consider that to be something that should no longer be part of his access to information.
Well, I would assume, I'll answer this for Greg, if you don't mind, Greg, is everybody, including yourself, Kurt, you can go and collect and hoard all of the information that you want and keep, I mean, that's yours. I mean, you're going to go out there and investigate, research. It could be butterflies. It doesn't matter to me. But you can go out and collect whatever. You know, so and presidents, all of the presidential libraries, that's everything that they've ever had goes back into the public domain. So I'm not sure that is that big of a deal. And I don't think we should be surprised that somebody like that would have a collection of information and have it centralized, whether it's electric or not. Collection of photographs, notes, letters, personal letters, it could be anything, and I think we would expect them to have a central depository of all of that, because it would be a lot of information collected over a lot of years. I think Kurt has left us. Let's go to Wildcard Annie in Alabama. She has a question about malware. Annie, welcome to Coast.
Yes, I know somebody who wanted to go on to one of those instructable websites so they could learn how to do something with electronics. And they encountered this document converter called from doc to PDF, which I thought was unnecessary. It's a file converter. And it ended up installing a new browser, a new homepage. They hijacked your browser and installed this new homepage. I just want to know if you're familiar with that, and what is their purpose, what are they after, and how much damage can they do to your computer?
Yeah.
And I saw the thing was uninstalled. You went to the control panel and uninstalled a program, and it appears to be gone.
Yeah, yeah, Annie, that's a great question. You know what's funny, Greg, as I hear her ask that, there is nothing worse than getting a new browser installed over your browser, and suddenly you're bombed with ads just because you clicked on something. And getting one of those off of your computer is sometimes very... You might as well buy a new computer sometimes.
I agree. I mean, you know, the damage they can do is they can track what you're viewing, what you're watching, store that information. Most of the time, they take that information and use it for marketing purposes. And, you know, they get a lot of money for reselling that stuff. getting it off, I mean, there are a lot of good tools to keep that from happening in the first place. If you're a Windows user, my favorite is Malwarebytes. And if you're a Mac user, Sophos, S-O-P-H-O-S, make a free anti-malware antivirus that does a really good job of blocking that.
Yeah, you know what I do now? You know how I avoid it? I'm boring. I just don't go to sites that I don't know. I just don't do it. I don't click on anything that I think is fun. I just don't. I go to sites that I know, and I click on I never click on an ad. I never click on anything that is outside of a news source. I just don't do it. Because any time that I ever have, any time, it's like 100%. Anytime you just drift off, something bad happens. I mean, it's a guarantee. And I've been quite lucky over the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years where I haven't had a virus or any malware issues. And I run 6 computers right now, you know, at the same time. And I've been safe. Well, sort of, but pretty much. Let's go to, let's go to first time caller line. I want to talk to Connie right out here, West Covina. Connie, welcome to Coast.
Hi, Jim, and thank you for your hosting.
Thank you, Connie. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Greg, I have a question for you.
Sure.
They have switched the telephone company. This is for my landline. They've switched the telephone company, and since I've been with them for 4 or 5 months, I have been receiving phone calls on my bill that I do not know and I've not made. The phone company doesn't seem to know what to do about it. And on top of that, I have a little answer machine, so I don't even get on the phone unless I know who's calling. But about almost every time I receive a call or I talk on the phone and hang up, right away after that, the answer machine comes on, and there's no one there.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah.
What did you did something to Connie. Connie, you did something to somebody. You know what? That's what Greg says to me. Jimmy, who have you made angry?
I know. Right? Well, one of the women at the phone company did take time for me, and she even got on her own cell phone.
Well, Connie, before we hit this break, I've got 1 minute here. Greg, do you have a way to address that?
So you switched phone companies. Of course, talking to them is obviously the easiest one. The numbers that you're seeing, have you asked the phone company if these are premium numbers? There are some new scams out there where people are finding ways to get premium phone numbers to call you that you then call back because you didn't know any better. And then, boom, you're hitting for a dollar.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and even, and Connie, thank you for the phone call. We're going to hit a break here, but thank you for that. And the thing is, even if that little phone call, when you call back, that little fraction of a second, that adds up across the country over millions and millions of phone calls that go out and that are turned around and returned as a phone call. And it's pretty amazing how that works. Our guest tonight is Greg Hausch. I am your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George Norrie. We're talking not only anonymous, we're talking hacking, hacktivism, and the deep dark web. We're taking your calls. It is Friday night. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. More with Greg right after this short break. Stay with us. All right, welcome back. If you enjoy me hosting Coast, if you dig what's going on here, you've got to check out my show. It's called Fade to Black. It's Monday through Thursday, 7 to 10 p.m. live Pacific time, and it's right before Coast to Coast. So what you do is you get 3 hours of me, and then you get 4 hours of George and other amazing guests, and you've got 7 hours of straight paranormal. That's what I'm talking about. Just click on my name there at Coast to Coast. It'll take you over to jimmychurchradio.com, and all of the information is there. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio, and I stay on that. All of the information about what we are doing, where we are going, and where we are speaking, and all of our events are posted on Twitter as well as the website. My guest tonight is Greg Hausch. He's agreed. He went the gamut with us tonight, and I'm going to get through all of these phone calls with Greg right after this short break. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, Greg Hausch. Greg, I'm just going to thank you right now. Amazing show tonight. Thank you so much. And I know how much you were looking forward to this, and so was I. But to do this with me on a Friday night, I think is really, really cool. And the audience has enjoyed every minute of it. So on behalf of the audience and everybody here at Coast, I just want to thank you as we head into late into the fourth quarter here. Let's go out east. Let's go to Porter in Leesburg, Florida. Lee, quickly, you're on Coast.
Yes, Jimmy, thanks for taking my call. And Greg, I got a question for you. I'm going to date myself. I was a network security manager with NARBOC back in the days when Captain Crunch was seizing our trunks with that 2600 cycles. Anyway, I saw a testimony in Congress the other day about a programmer reprogramming voting machines to manipulate the vote counts. And my question is how secure is the whole system, including the networking part, where somebody can't take over that or manipulate the data before all the voting tabulation is done? I'll take my answer off the air. Jimmy, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thank you, Porter. I knew voting machines would come up, Greg, so go ahead.
Sure. I mean, you know, the question of how secure are all of these machines, I think more comes down to the companies that are actually building these machines. And, you know, really why they're getting the contracts to build these things. You know, they're grandfathered in, they're buddy-buddy, they've had government contracts forever. I mean, you know, old-school Diebold, now, you know, Premier Elections and, you know, DESI and like a billion other names for all these things. I don't believe for a minute that their stuff is secure. I have seen in the dark places out there on the web people talking about exact methods to hack older models as these. And if it got out there, you know, to where a lot of that information was what I consider public, maybe not what the general public considers public, but then I can only imagine what they're doing to the current machines. One, I don't believe for a minute that the stuff that they currently are attempting to use, especially the systems from former Diebold, now Premier Elections,
right,
the companies, is right in any way secure. I don't believe that the companies getting the contracts deserve those contracts and even could build secure if they wanted to.
And especially because we have, you know, obviously, the run for POTUS is coming up in November. And if there was ever a question of security and vulnerability in voting machines, it's going to happen this time around. And it's not so much the how secure they are. How do we know that that we would be able to accurately recount the votes? You know, there's just no way to guarantee the data. It's not so much that the machines could be hacked. You know what I mean? If you're going to cheat the system,
we need a paper voting trail.
Right.
We're going to do recount.
Exactly.
Instantly spit out a paper vote that the person voting can see to prove that it's printed what they said. I mean, that's at a minimum what I would require before I thought these things were even slightly secure.
Absolute, a receipt, if you will. Let's go to Leslie Wildcard in Louisiana. Leslie, welcome to Coast. Real quick for Greg.
What a bunch of horseshit.
Okay. All right. Let's go to, I don't think she knew
this.
I don't think she knew she was on the line. Let's go to Steve out here in the Hollywood Hills.
Hi, Jim. I have to congratulate you. It's another great show. And I had to laugh when I heard Greg talk about how he first heard of Coast to Coast on a little radio. First time I heard about Coast to Coast, I was a couple of hundred miles outside of L.A. falling asleep as I was driving in from the desert. And I was trying desperately to get some radio station just to keep me awake. And sure enough, Coast to Coast was the only one that actually came through. And it was so interesting that I was awake the whole time, didn't fall asleep.
There you go.
Anyway, my question to Greg is, I was sort of wondering how Anonymous comes to decide on what cause they want to go after. I've always been impressed with a lot of their campaigns. There happens to be a website that's a horrible website that been sued. We've contacted the Attorney General. Nothing's been done about it. Call ripoffreport.com. I don't know whether Greg has ever heard of them. What they do is they put these bogus, salacious information on a person's about a person that always appears on the first page of Google. And then what they do is they tell you, and it's all fake. I know people have spent at least $100,000 getting law firms to try to sue them. It always is a bogus email account.
Well, and Steve, let me jump in here really quick, Steve, before we run out of time. And I totally understand the question, and thank you for that. Which is, Greg, how does Anonymous determine an op?
So, you know, Anonymous determining something is kind of a funny way to say things. That's not really, there's not, like, Anonymous doesn't exist as an entity, as a thing that can make decisions. But what happens is a much more organic process. You know, let's say you have a specific target in mind, and you come up with a solid pitch as to why you think this is a target that Anonymous should be going after, and you say you're Anonymous while doing it, that makes you Anonymous. There are three things that are going to happen, one of these three things. The first one being everyone thinks your idea is great, and they find what you're talking about, and they find you and start talking to you, and you guys start working on this wonderful op. The second thing that might happen is people don't really care. They don't show up. You might hear from one person, realize this isn't going to happen. The third thing that's going to happen is what you suggested is detrimental, possibly false flaggish, and you are now the target.
Right. It'll come, turn around and come right back on top of you.
So with those three kind of responses to possible ops, it's sort of self-correcting in that it tries to, you know, without actually being a real entity, it tries to, you know, keep the bad ops from happening and only support the good ones to get, I guess, what you could consider kind of a consensus among people who consider themselves an op.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And what about somebody that tries to make it personal and they're trying to hide an op? You know, an op is a good idea, but because it's actually hidden behind a personal agenda.
So when there's a personal agenda, if it's, you know, obvious, then the Anons will usually show up and scream one of their favorite things to scream, which is not your personal army, and just tell you to go away. If it's not visible and you trick some people into doing it, if they figure it out that this was a personal vendetta,
right,
they might be very angry at you because you wasted their time on a personal vendetta, and then you become the target.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's always a bit tricky when you choose to use Anonymous, if it's just because you think this is the right thing to do or because it's a super personal kind of thing.
Yeah, your ex-girlfriend or your ex-wife, that is not a good idea. Let's go to, I want to head out, let's head out east. Chris in Tampa, Florida. Welcome to Coast. Really quick, what do you have for Greg?
I was just curious, like, say there's no electricity tomorrow, all the computers, the internet are gone. What is Greg going to do the next day?
Oh, there you go. Greg, you got no electricity, no computers. What do you do for fun?
Well, depending on what caused that to be the case, I'm probably going to go outside and play in a park with my kids.
Huh?
I think, you know, now that I don't have to be focused on all these screens and I can't do my job, I'm going to go outside.
Let's go out west. David, out here in California. Say hi to Greg.
Yeah. Hi, Greg. You know, one of Ray Kurzweil's projects and Google's project that they're developing is the Google chip, which they want to implant into people's brains. Either you're going to do that, and if they do that, then they've hacked into everybody, and people would just be a slave to the singularity.
Well,
actually,
David, and thank you for the call. And with that, if they did do chip implanting, right, then the goal would be to hack the chip after your brain's been hacked, right? I would assume that's what happens next.
For me personally, I don't see myself implanting chips at any time. I just don't see that as a thing I'd ever want to do. I know that Ray Kurzweil is definitely working on some interesting projects. I hadn't heard of that one. I would have to read up to kind of get a better feel for what that project might be, if that's like an official project or anything. But I don't see myself implanting anything. I want none of that.
Yeah, neither do I. Let's go to first-time caller line. I'm going to try to get through all of these calls tonight. Let's go to Sal in Fresno. He has a question about caller IDs.
Yeah, hey, hi, guys. Great show. Who keeps calling me from all these weird numbers? I've gotten a couple of calls here the last couple of days from a whole bunch of ones, and I feel like there's, like, I don't know, are they just prank calling, or where do they even come from?
Do you call them back?
No. Oh, well, yeah, I try to call everybody back. I don't usually answer because, I'm distrustful of the weird numbers, but I call them back.
Have you ever answered it once? I mean, have you ever gotten anything out of it?
No, they just, and if I do answer, they just don't, there's nothing on the other line, on the other side.
Well, it's probably one of the robocall systems trying to test for valid phone numbers to build lists so they can do marketing later. It's a pretty horrible thing, but the one thing that's interesting about what you say there is, it's actually really easy to spoof your caller ID. It's just also, you know, an FCC rule, and it's highly illegal, but people do it anyways because prove that they did it and, you know, track them down. You have 11111. That doesn't go to anyone.
Right. And, you know, the other thing is, and thank you for the phone call, Sal, that's something that is out there today. The other thing, they're looking for valid numbers. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And also,
for marketing.
And when you get, you know, some spam email, and at the bottom of the email where it says unsubscribe, click here, the second you click there, you've just verified your email address. You're not unsubscribing to anything. So always think about that. I'm going to head back out east. Let's swap. Let's go to Tina in Athens, Georgia. Tina, you're live.
Hi, thanks. You made me change one question. It was about the voting machines. I thought that was a good idea about the receipt. But I was thinking maybe two separate buildings for the different parties. I mean.
Oh, that's a great idea. That's a great idea.
But the other thing I was thinking is about when you got Facebook. Just a question. You got people that is wanting to be your friend, and they say they're friends with other friends. Somebody did that, and then it said it was, you could see the friends, and it said new post on all the friends that they said they were your friends with. And then I was like, what is this? How did they get to be your friend when you did not, or why do they want to be your friend? Because I saw like a foreign sort of spaniel, but yet they act like they're from Alabama. So it's
all for marketing. I mean, that's also just for money. People trying to build huge Facebook groups so they can market online stuff to them. The more friends they have, the more people they have active. It's just like an email list or a good phone call list for a sales team. Literally all those bots are just for marketing.
Thank you for the phone call, Tina, and have a great rest of your weekend. There you go. I wanted to, we're nearly here at the end, Greg, so I'm going to ask you a couple of personal questions. Number one,
sure.
And I think that we're all kind of on the same page with this. You and your friends, your hacker buddies, do you guys have this dark secret place where you guys get together? And when you do that, it could be either on some IRC, it could be that, but I'm talking about in a physical place. What do you guys talk about? Are you guys talking about sports, or are you guys talking about current technology and ways to get things done?
That's definitely a good question. I'm one of the weird types in this area, in that most of my other friends who are or were, you know, hacker types laugh at the idea of sports, and I love sports. I think that's because I'm from Dallas, and growing up in Dallas, if you weren't a Cowboys fan, you like got hit with a brick, I think was the rule. I'm not sure on that because I like the Cowboys, so I didn't get hit with that brick. But, so I kind of find myself in those groups normally just talking about the latest politics, the latest things that are pissing us off, what a hacker's done in the last week that we all found interesting, as for a place, there's definitely a few places out there where you could say kind of the old ones of us who aren't doing much of the actual hacking anymore hang out, talk, and A, talk about the good old times, and B, kind of talk to a lot of the new people, you know, as they're doing stuff.
And another thing that goes along with that, when I first met you, I've seen you, you know, a lot. I've seen images of you a lot over the years, but I meet you in person, and I'm going to be straight with you, man. You are the exact opposite of what the image of the hacker is, right? The black hoodie, you know,
right.
and that is not you. And I was surprised, and I thought you were a negative guy. I thought you were somebody that was depressed and all of that. And you were none of that. And I think you're very outgoing, and I think you're very positive. I think you've had a crazy life, but you've landed on your feet, and you're doing the right things now. And I want to thank you for all of that. And I want to thank you for all that you have done. And okay. There you go. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, you know, there are definite, uniforms and subcultures. You know, you can tell someone who thinks they're a punk usually, whether they are or not is kind of irrelevant, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of my friends wear hoodies, and I own a few, but like, I don't know, I grew out of that as what I wore and just kind of wear whatever I feel comfortable with. And you know, I don't really care about other people's opinions about, you know, how I look or act. So luckily it seems to work. Like this field is so full of the real individual that we're kind of used to a group of five people being five really distinct people.
Absolutely, Greg. And I'll talk to you over the next week, because we're going to get Op UFO going. That's our next goal. That's the next one. Thank you so much, Greg. This has been Coast to Coast. I've got to thank Dan, Donna, Chris, Lisa, Stephanie, Lex, George, Tom, and of course, Rita. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George Norrie. Thank you for hanging out with me on this Friday. Go Beckley Tepe.